And welcome to the NHL Hour from the NHL Store, powered by Reebok in the heart of Manhattan. We're on NHL Home Ice, XM204 and NHL.com. Let me spit out the phone number right away. 877-645-6696. 877-645-6696. Bill Clement here with you. And we always joke about Commissioner Gary Bettman getting here, just breezing in before showtime. 15 seconds sometimes. 10 seconds. We're counting down. This time I'm not crying wolf. He ain't here. And Gary is in high-level meetings. I was told he was in high-level meetings, and I thought, that has to be the most redundant term in the world. Is there such a thing as a commissioner of a major sports league being in low-level meetings? I don't think so. And he's not here to hear the music that we're going to usher in, the different segments. We do expect him momentarily. And as everybody knows that listens to the show, Commissioner Gary Bettman is a fan of everybody from Bruce Springsteen to the Grateful Dead, Buffalo Springfield. And when he gets here, I want to ask him about an element of all of the festivities in Detroit and the jam-packed last weekend, Memorial Day weekend, that went on with the Pistons playing and with the Stanley Cup Finals being there. And incidentally, we'll talk about the TV ratings. Basketball doesn't scare anybody in Detroit anymore when it comes to the TV ratings. But I have to get the commissioner's take on something that I will never get out of my head, and it is oons, incessant oons. Why? Because there was a techno music convention in Detroit over Memorial Day weekend that started Friday and ended sometime Monday after midnight. And even on the 61st floor of the hotel that we were staying in, the big Ren Center Marriott, these speakers were set up outside. And at 3 a.m., oons. I haven't been able to figure out the melody yet on any of the... And I've professed to enjoy every type of music as long as it's well done. I really haven't been able to appreciate the oons yet. I might get some support on this. I understand that Elvis has not left the building in Pittsburgh. Jim Taddy, are you hanging out there?
Yeah, I hope you're going to break into some lyrics at some point, but it didn't happen.
Jimmy, there are no lyrics. There is only oons.
Well, that's why I tend to sleep through those. I've got a lot of kids. I tend to sleep through those things.
You've gone deep, man. You've gone deep if you didn't hear the oons. Those speakers were as big as a Mack truck, and they didn't let up for the entire weekend. So are you still occupying the space of the NHL radio boys at the Igloo?
I hate to say this, but I'm actually right in your seat.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Well, that's all right. We leave a tithe, all right, we leave a contribution on the table when we sit in other people's seats. I hope you understand that format.
That might be something in the hockey world, but Canadian broadcasters do not subscribe.
So you've been taking calls and you've been talking to Greener. Is everybody giving the Pittsburgh Penguins credit for having won Game 3? Is the sentiment that the Penguins outplayed the Red Wings?
Yeah, but there were some elements in the Red Wing game from all accounts that could be used, much like there were elements in the Penguins game in Game 2 that could be used to better their plight in the next game. I mean, there's always positives, right?
And so there weren't for Pittsburgh in Detroit.
Well, yeah, but
you know what I mean?
Coach
so
Terry,
there aren't always positives.
Yeah, but you remember Coach Terry and after Game 2, and I don't know if he was just saying that to get his players to buy in or if he actually believed it. But he said there were some good elements there, and they could build on that for Game 3. And I think there were some pretty good elements for Detroit. I found the start of the game absolutely off the charts, totally weird. I wasn't expecting a 9-1 shot advantage for the visiting team.
Well, I thought that the Red Wings played the perfect road game. They stick to a game plan better than any team I've ever seen because they chipped pucks in. Pavel Datsyuk didn't try to beat people out high at the blue line. He chipped pucks by people, and they played a lot in Pittsburgh zone. I will say this. I think the Penguins' defense deserve a ton of credit, and Michael Therrien especially, for changing the matchup. Hal Gill and Rob Scuderi survived for the first two periods extremely well against the Pavel Datsyuk line. I know Hal Gill got into a penalty trouble in the second period. Holmstrom kind of took him to school on two of those cross-checks, but they did a great job in the third period when the Penguins had the lead. The matchup reverted to Sergei Gonchar and Brooks Orpik, who was the one-man wrecking ball in that game. So I thought Pittsburgh's defense was awesome.
You know, I said this earlier, and I'm glad I'm on with you because you can testify to its accuracy. The Brooks Orpik shift in the third period with the the four or five belts. I mean, I haven't seen a shift like that since the Flyers drove the Russians off the ice at the Spectrum.
But that was only Ed Van Imp's one hit that shook the world.
There were a couple down ice, too. I mean, I think there were three hits in a row there, and Ed absolutely finished it off with style.
Oh, Ed, yeah, he finished the whole thing off, and that was when the Russians left the ice surface and Allan Eagleson went into their locker room. And what people might not know is that Russian team back in 1976 was still owed $25,000 for their tour. The Flyers were the last stop on the tour, and they were still owed $25,000, which in the 70s and which in communist Soviet Union times was a lot of rubles. Okay,
yeah.
And Al just basically laid it out: no comeback, no rubles. And that's why the Russian team resurfaced to play the rest of the game. But Brooks Orpik knocked down four people. He looked like a runaway bowling ball, and the Red Wings looked like bowling pins. And I said this earlier, and when I was talking to you and Phil, that Brooks Orpik got a chance to, you know, when you see these guys in the locker room and they're walking around in their Under Armour, you see just what they're built like. And Brooks Orpik is a tank and a truck of a man that did a fantastic job in that single shift. So. I think all systems are going the blue line for the Penguins. The only thing, Jimmy, that the Penguins need to do, their forwards need to make sure that they don't allow the Red Wings speed in the neutral zone, and they seemed at times more bent on scoring their fourth goal than they were denying the Red Wings their third goal. So some adjustments to be made. And, Jimmy, thank you for keeping the seat warm in Pittsburgh. You have now been released. Don't forget to leave a small contribution in the little cup.
I don't like the term released. That has a real negative connotation.
Okay, then you're being sent down to the minors. Would you rather have that?
How about
sent
waved?
Down to a warmer floor? Oh, waved. Okay, that's good, Commissioner. Thank you.
How are you? Thank you for
good.
Filling in. I learned the pitfalls and perils of having the office and the studio in the same building. We had an executive committee meeting today, and we ran a little late, and I apologize, but thank you for filling in.
My pleasure.
Your wave, Jimmy. Goodbye.
Okay, goodbye.
All right. Phone number again before we get started, 877-645-6696, 645-6696. Commissioner Gary Bettman is now in the house. I mentioned that you had a high-level meeting, which I thought was redundant because I don't know of a commissioner in your position that would ever have a low-level meeting.
Oh, stop it.
Really?
That sounds so arrogant and pompous.
Oh, listen. You're the commissioner of the National Hockey League.
Yeah, so?
Well, okay, describe a low-level meeting for me.
We meet with people all the time who have any and a variety of interests. It's easy to get a meeting with me. We take phone calls, we take emails, we take meetings, because we want to be accessible to any constituent group relative to the game.
To the average guy in the street, the executive committee's high level.
Yes. It was a long, intensive day. We started at 9:30 this morning and worked through lunch and just finished. But it's good to be here with you. It's good to see you. Did you come back from Pittsburgh just to be with me?
You bet. Got back to home this morning and drove into the city.
Well, I got you home for a couple of days at least.
Well, till tomorrow. Got to get back to Pittsburgh tomorrow evening.
Did you enjoy the game last night?
Very much so.
It was, putting aside who won and lost, it was more entertaining, I suppose, than the other two.
It was back and forth. And, if anybody watched the game and they saw Sidney Crosby score two goals, the pucks seemed to find great players. I mean, the pucks just found Sidney on both of his goals, and I'm always reminded that great players put themselves in the position to have pucks find them. And Sidney, I thought, was lights out last night.
He had a good game. And the Red Wings weren't bad. I mean, to the contrary, they've been
agreed.
Dominating. I suppose Red Wing fans were hoping for a sweep, which is a very difficult thing to have happen. But I think this series will continue to build in intensity, and it'll be interesting to see what happens on Saturday night on NBC.
Yep. The ratings.
And the CBC. Did you go over the ratings? Did you mention them?
I said that we were going to get to them,
go
but
ahead.
I didn't.
You can do it.
Well, in the U.S., Game 3 was the best Game 3 overnight rating in six seasons for the Stanley Cup Finals. 2.8 national overnight for NBC. Detroit, for all of the people that were concerned about the NHL taking a hit going head-to-head with basketball, the National Hockey League outrated in Detroit the NBA and the Pistons. So, not bad so far.
No, but I mean, listen, in the interest of candor, and the first two games we went head-to-head, it wasn't that way. On Saturday night, the Pistons were on ABC, and we were on Versus.
Sure.
And on Monday night, the Pistons were on ESPN, and we were on Versus. And when we were on NBC and they were on ESPN, then we ranked. So I think it's been a pretty mixed bag. What is fascinating to me is there were a lot of people in Detroit watching sports.
No kidding. You know what a lot of people were doing, too, that I mentioned before you got here that I can't get out of my head? And we talk about your taste in music, and we love a lot of the same music. All I got in my head right now from Detroit is, oons, 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 oons. You had to have walked by those gigantic speakers, the techno music convention. That is the only genre of music I don't really like because I can't hum it.
Actually, inside the arena on the suite level, they had four guys singing Motown, and that was great. It completely drowned out
the techno music?
Music. I talked about it in my media availability. I didn't even know what it was.
It's music with a beat and nothing else, I believe. I mean, all those techno music fans out there, feel free to weigh in on this and call us with your questions. This is the NHL Hour. Gary Bettman, Commissioner of the NHL. I'm Bill Clement. Our phone number here in New York, 877. As a matter of fact, the phone number is the same everywhere in North America, 877-645-6696. Weigh in. I want to mention the officiating. I think it's been awesome so far.
But before you do that, I understand, and again, I've been in meetings all day, we had a bit of a tragedy today in the NHL family. Luc Bourdon, the 21-year-old defense prospect of the Canucks, was killed today in a motorcycle accident. For people who weren't familiar with him, he was the 10th overall selection in the 2005 entry draft, which was the same draft that Sidney Crosby came into the league with. And he was, five picks after Carey Price and one pick ahead of Kopitar. He played, I think, 9 games with the Canucks.
Canucks fans are so... He was
age 19, and then he went back to the juniors.
Mm-hmm.
Our absolute heartfelt condolences to his family, to the Canucks, and to everybody who knew him.
It's a tragic moment. He was killed just outside of his hometown in his home province of New Brunswick, and it was a shock. I sat here for a couple of minutes before you got here and saw that that had just come up on NHL.com, so... Without a doubt, our condolences to the Bourdon family. Tragic when one of our members is lost.
You know, it's life and games always intersect, and there's a reality to everything that touches the game.
Without a doubt. I'd mention the officials.
Go ahead.
With whom I've been impressed. And listen, the officials, I believe, have missed a couple. There was Gary Roberts whacked to the jaw Johan Franzen in game two. And Nick Lidstrom took a stick up high. But I think it's worth pointing out, at least to me, there's a big difference in missing something, and they can't see and will not see absolutely everything that happens. I find there's a big difference between missing something and seeing something and getting it wrong, and I don't believe that the refs have done that. I think they've done a fantastic job.
You know, I think that's a fair comment, and the way I look at that, And it's always easy as you're in the stands to be critical of an official's call. You know, if a player puts his stick up horizontally and then he gets called for interference because he doesn't have body position, and it turns out the stick never touched the skating player, okay, you can say what was the angle that the official had to look at it. But when you do that as a player and you put your stick horizontal to the ice, you put yourself in jeopardy to a bad call being made.
Yes.
But the rule of thumb that I use, whenever there's a call that I'm not sure about and I don't have the benefit of replay, I look at where the official was standing. And then I say to myself, was he in position? Did he have a good look at it? And if he did, then chances are he got it right. They don't make too many errors on the things that they see. Same thing, you know, it's funny, when a linesman who's standing on the blue line puts his arm up that it's offsides and everybody in the arena starts screaming at him, you know, I'd say of the 18,000 people in the arena, the guy standing on the blue line probably had the best look at it.
Without a doubt. By the way, we've got Vinny LeCavalier, who is one of the recipients of the NHL Foundation Player Award yesterday. in Pittsburgh. There was a luncheon that I had the privilege of getting a chance to MC. Vinny LeCavalier of the Tampa Bay Lightning is going to join us around 4:30. And I know somebody, do you want to get a couple of calls in, Gary?
Absolutely.
Because I know somebody's going to ask us about the Winter Classic before I ask you. So
okay.
Let's
go. So why don't we take Bill in Philly? Isn't that you?
I'm here. It can't be me today.
Bill in Philly, you're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking my question. I love this show.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Great. Commissioner, you hadn't shown up yet when I posed the question, but maybe I'll change it just a little bit to ask you a couple things. First, Bill, I want to say that you have said one of the most profound things months ago when I was listening to you talk about what constitutes an exciting game. And you made the point that it's not about the scoreboard, but about end-to-end action. And every time I see a game like last night, I'm reminded of that comment, and I think it's right on the mark.
Thanks. Yeah, it was. Great game last night in that regard. You bet.
Yeah. My question for let me ask you a couple. The first one that I have is in regards to the way Gill was playing last night. If I'm going to understand the rule of cross-checking, it seems to me like a lot of players are cross-checking all the time. What's the distinction between when they're just trying to kind of knock Holmstrom a little bit and when they actually make the call of cross-checking? That's to you, Bill. And my question to the commissioner is, what kind of leverage can the NHL have for the home teams? I'm actually a Capitals fan, not a Phillies fan, and I still have my Caps tickets. And I feel like we get the short end of the stick at the Verizon Center versus the Washington Wizards in terms of getting the ideal or even the fair amount of weekend night games. And I'll hang up and listen to y'all. Thanks very much.
All right, we'll get to the Hal Gill thing. I don't know the specific wording of the cross-check, but my interpretation is when it's a distinct blow with your hands a certain distance apart on the stick, and there's a degree of force that has to be interpreted, too, by the ref, when it's a direct blow with the stick that is accompanied by a follow-through and extension of the arms.
And I also think relative to height on the body. In other words,
no
if
doubt.
You're pushing off at the waist,
sure,
as opposed to really doing it at the chest level,
yes,
and the force is absolutely right.
Big difference between a push and a blow to the back. And Hal Gill is 6'7", so he's got to be really careful with the height of it, as you point out, Gary. So fire away with the second one.
And the second, in terms of weekend dates and available dates and which team has priority, it depends on the arena, who owns it, and what the leases say. In the case of Washington, Abe Pollin is currently the majority owner of both the Wizards and the Verizon Center. Ted Leonsis is his partner, but the terms of the lease as between the Capitals and the Verizon Center and the Wizards and the Verizon Center, I believe, for certain dates gives priority, certain dates, to the basketball team. There are places where the hockey team has priority in two-team situations. I think Boston may be an example. I'm not 100% sure because I haven't seen their lease, but that's a case where the owner of the TD Bank North Garden is also the owner of the Bruins, and so the basketball team, the Celtics, is more the tenant. It varies from building to building and is based entirely on the lease relationship that each team has for that building. Why don't we go to Thad in Pennsylvania? You're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Howdy.
To you.
Thanks for taking my call. And before I ask my question, I would like to echo the sentiments of some callers in past Thursdays that really appreciate the commissioner coming on and really giving his time, because no other sport does this, where you come on and you really take calls, and some of them are tough calls for you probably to answer, and I think it's a great thing that you do that and really stand up for your sport.
Well, thank you very much, but I do that because we have great fans, people like you, who want to call in and tell us what's on your mind and ask questions.
Okay. Well, my question is, first of all, I didn't see it last night for maybe the first time that Detroit has played in the playoffs. And if you watch the highlight reels, especially before game one, when they showed Cronwell some of his hits, you know, to me, he a couple times in the Dallas series, he left his feet after a 50 or 60-foot run and just threw himself. And you know, as far as I can decipher, that's a penalty in any hockey league, whether it be the NHL league or if you're playing mini-mites. You know, you leave your feet. Well, of course, you can't check at that age, but you know, and he seems to do it on a game basis. There's at least one hit, maybe two in some games. He didn't do it last night, but my question is, does the NHL officials look at that a lot, or do they seem to have let, you know, some of that go? Because I've seen a lot of that. I think one of the Pittsburgh players did it last night, and I couldn't recall who it was, and I think it was in, would have been the third period. I really thought he left his feet when he checked, and I guess that's my question, and I'll hang up and I'll listen to your answer. Thanks.
It's a fair question. I haven't noticed that as being much of an issue. If the calls are being missed, our hockey operations and officiating supervisory staffs will bring it to the attention of the officials. Obviously, if you're traveling a great distance and you're leaving your feet, you should be called for a penalty. You should be called for charging. Sometimes, though, somebody finishing their check, and if you're watching it in slow motion,
right,
may look like they're leaving their feet when, in fact, when they administered the check, their feet were on the ground. And sometimes looking at it in slow motion can be a little deceptive.
Some of us were talking about Cronwall's hitting, and it was brought up in the conversation the other day that sometimes he leaves his feet, but it's to thrust himself forward, and it's never to get higher in his hit, which is a critical point. When you get up higher to hit somebody high, that's a real issue. Cronwall is just a devastating open ice hitter, and you know the refs are probably more sensitive to leaving your feet if the boards are involved.
There's no question about it, and so I don't think that they're consistently missing calls where players are checking by leaving their feet, because it would have been brought to their attention and it wouldn't have happened game to game. Although I'm going to take a good close look and I'm going to go back and ask some questions to make sure. You know, it may be that in fact it was missed and it was a point of emphasis in one of the pregame meetings for the officials. And as people, I think, know, we rotate the officials through, so you're not getting the same referees working together in every game as well. So it wouldn't be the same guys consistently missing the same call. So I'm a little suspect, but it's worth taking a look at.
His hits are so devastating, I can understand why people would think that he might be cheating somehow, but boy, he just catches people by surprise.
No question. John in Florida, you're on XM204 with Bill and Gary. How are you?
I'm doing great, Gary. Two things. I don't know if you're aware of this, but every Thursday afternoon when you start talking, they do the emergency broadcast test. So there's about 30 seconds of your opening comments get cut off every Thursday.
On XM?
On XM. I don't know if it's just down here in Florida, but it's that, you know, that chirping, that it sounds like that squawking emergency broadcast testing.
Right.
My engineer and my producer are both shaking their heads in disbelief. They're saying not possible. That doesn't happen. Guys, go check. Maybe we have a satellite problem in Florida.
Every Thursday afternoon between 4 and 4:30, they do the emergency broadcast check on all the channels on XM down here in Florida.
Really?
Did not know.
Are you in your car every week at the same time?
Yep, I'm coming home from work.
Maybe there's an alarm or something in your car having nothing to do with the satellite radio.
No.
By the way, this is a first. Of all the calls we've gotten, we've never gotten one like this before. Where in Florida are you?
In Bel Air.
Bel Air? Okay.
Just south of Clearwater.
We're going to go check with our technical people to find out why we're chirping.
For days when Gary's 30 seconds late coming in, we're going to cue that to buy him 30 seconds to get in his seat.
I've never been late until today.
I know.
It's been close.
Well, hopefully the next caller that calls in can verify the fact.
Okay.
My radio does. Anyhow.
Anyway, besides chirping, what can we do for you?
Quick question. What, when I watch the reffing during the regular season compared to the playoffs, The refereeing in the playoffs, they're a lot more lenient than they are in the regular season. Is that just me seeing that, or are the players allowed to play more physical and more, tough in the playoffs than they are in the regular season? Because they get away with a lot more in the playoffs.
They're not instructed to officiate any differently. My guess is the players aren't playing exactly the same as they do in the regular season.
I agree with that.
Because in the course of a series, the series builds in intensity. There are adjustments that the coaches and the players make to what's going on with the other team, because instead of playing a different team every night, they're playing the same team over, and it's a game of chess. I think what you're seeing is the officials reacting to what may be a different style of play that happens as a series unfolds. You have a different view, Mr. Clement?
No, not a different view, but I will say this. There's more hitting in the playoffs, and there are more players hitting cleanly and making sure that they don't take penalties in the playoffs, which could create the illusion that the refs have let up on the calls, because there's more hitting, players are more careful, but I still see the sticks parallel to the ice. Nick Lidstrom got a call, obstruction in the neutral zone. I don't think that the refs let up.
You know, and that raises an interesting point, and maybe I'm tired, but this may be too much of a tangent as a result. You know, a lot of people said when we came back with the revised standard of officiating after the work stoppage that because we were calling penalties for interference, obstruction, hooking and holding, whatever you want to, we took the physicality out of the game. And one had nothing to do with the other because, in fact, since there was more room and more speed, there were more devastating open ice hits. So, in fact, we thought we made the game more physical. So I don't think people should, on the other side of the coin, confuse more physicality, which, as you pointed out, Bill, you're likely to see in the playoffs, with, you know, somehow we've let up on officiating.
Right.
Because it's not the same thing. The two are unrelated. A clean hit's a clean hit, and because we're calling penalty doesn't mean we're getting rid of hitting.
At the same time, a ref wants to make sure he makes the right call. He understands the pressure that the whole arena is under, from themselves to the players, so they want to make sure they get it right.
Nobody wants to get it right more than the officials,
right?
Or perhaps me and Coley Campbell. Let's go to Steve in Ohio. You're on with Bill and Gary.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on is the NBC broadcast. I thought they did a really good job. I grew up in the Detroit area, so I got to see the CBC broadcast, and they always did well with ice level camera shots and crowd noise and things like that, and I saw a lot more of that last night than I had in the past. And Versus does well with it too, but I thought that, especially with the excitement generated by the crowd, it played really well last night on TV.
I didn't get to see it on TV because I was at the game, but I will agree, when I get to see tapes of what's going on and I'm watching the course of the season, I think we're at a particularly fortunate point in time in terms of our national broadcasting relationships in Canada and the United States. I think NBC versus CBC, TSN, and RDS are all on top of their games right now, and that's great for our fans because I think our game's being covered better than it's ever been.
Yeah, no, to see some of those shots, you get to see the speed of the game and the intensity of it and whatnot, and if you always have one or two camera views from up in the second deck, you don't feel it quite as much. So,
what do you think of the innovation with Pierre Maguire inside the glass?
I think that's pretty neat too. You get a feel for what the guys are saying, and again, the intensity or the flow of the game. I think it's a neat thing. Yeah, all of that is good. I mean, the closer you can get to the action, I guess, the better.
We agree. I think it's been a positive innovation, and it's being copied by lots and lots of our broadcasters, both local and national.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, no, thanks. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Are we ready to take another call? One more, they tell me, before we have to take a break. Let's take Harlan in Arizona. Harlan, you're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Hi, Mr. Bettman. How are you?
I'm okay. What about you?
First off, I wanted to say hello to a fellow fraternity brother in the AE Pi Brethren.
Oh, there it is. The secret's out. What college did you go to?
I grew up in Michigan, so I went to Eastern Michigan my first year, and then I moved out to Scottsdale, Arizona, and that's where I currently am right now.
Do you get to use the secret handshake much?
Sometimes.
Okay, just do it with the right people.
First off, also, to comment on a previous caller, yes, I also get that station identification thing. So I think it is something with XM Radio.
Really? You get it in, you get it in Arizona, too?
Yep.
Maybe it's sunspots. We'll have to take a look at it.
All right. My question is, just out of curiosity, was there talk of a suspension for Gary Roberts for the punch to the head on Johan Franzen? And also, after the games, Do the powers that be discuss with the referees about, you know, how well they did and what could have been better?
Absolutely. There's a series supervisor. When you get to the finals, Steve Walkham, the chief of staff of officiating, is at the game. Mike Murphy's at the game. Coley Campbell's at the game. And everything that goes on is reviewed and analyzed. They don't do everything in the heat of the moment. Generally, the next morning, there's another meeting. To the extent the coaches or the general managers want to have questions answered, they have an opportunity to do it. If there's any input that they want to give back to the teams in terms of what the officials are being told, they get to do that as well. I was with Coley Campbell after the game last night, coming back to New York, and he generally mentions to me when we're considering a suspension, and I don't think that the Roberts Act is being considered or was worthy of one.
Agreed. We're going to thank the callers in advance for your patience. Stick with us. We'll get to your calls, but when we come back, we're going to have Vinny LeCavalier of the Tampa Bay Lightning with us on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice XM 204 and NHL.com.
You know, the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, break on through to the other side, yeah.
It's a song about trying to beat the trap. That's exactly what it was.
Break on through to the other side?
Yes, the doors before their time. They didn't know they were talking about the neutral zone trap.
I didn't know they were hockey fans.
They didn't even know that. NHL Store powered by Reebok is where we are in our studios in the heart of Manhattan. This is the NHL Hour, and our special guest line is now open and occupied.
Vinny LeCavalier, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
Good. First of all, congratulations on being a recipient of the NHL Foundation Player Award.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a great honor for me to be there yesterday. It was a lot of fun.
Well, we're glad you were there, but I think it's important for everybody to know that among your charitable endeavors, you've committed $3 million to the Children's Hospital in St. Petersburg, Florida. Would you care to tell our listeners what's behind that, what you're thinking, why that's important to you?
Well, it's something I've always wanted to do, but, you know, when I started my career, I was 18, and, you know, my primary focus at first was to make it the NHL, and after that, I really wanted to start a foundation, you know, and then the lockout came. After that, I said, you know what, I'm going to start it right now, and it took us about a year to prepare for everything, and I went to a lot of different hospitals and different organisms. I want to make sure that it's really tough when you go from one place to the other, because every time I went to a hospital, I said, well, I want to give to this hospital. You know, I just felt like everybody's doing working so hard to for charity. So, but at the end, I decided to go with All Children's Hospital. And I made a pledge, $3 million pledge, and it's a building that's going to be ready in 2009. And it's a lot of fun. It's Pediatric Cancer and Blood Disorder Center. So it's been a lot of fun, and I can't wait for it to open.
It sounds like an incredibly worthwhile and generous gift. Speaking of health issues, how's your shoulder? And maybe you want to enlighten our listeners as to what happened and what procedure you had.
Yeah, it was kind of bad luck. I got hit. It was the second last game of the year. And, you know, it's just one of those things, you know, you get hit kind of in a perfect place to get hurt. And my shoulder dislocated. And, you know, right after that, they told me I needed surgery. So I got my surgery April 10th. And it's about a four-month rehab. So I'm doing a lot better now. The first 4 weeks were pretty tough being in a sling. But I'm starting to move around a little bit more. And, you know, every day I'm getting a little stronger.
How's your range of motion? And are you able to work out at all?
Not work out yet. You know, I started riding the bike because I need, you know, a month and a half without doing exercise is not my usual, that's not what I usually do. So I started riding the bike, but anything upper body, I stay away from for at least another month and a half.
You mentioned that it was an unfortunate end to the season, obviously. Was the past season the most frustration you've encountered since you came into the NHL?
You know what, it really was, because, you know, I first got in the NHL at 18, and our first 3 years we were losing. You know, I never really, we never won before. So after that, after winning the Cup, you know, you want to win every single year. So anytime you don't make the playoffs, and, you know, we made the playoffs 4 years in a row. So for us not to make the playoffs and finishing last was very tough. But, you know, we're... you know, there's new ownership and everything's kind of, you know, developing. So hopefully, you know, everything will be settled and we can start over again.
When your season's over, if you haven't won the Cup, do you stop watching hockey or do you keep watching it to see how it unfolds?
You know what? It's usually very tough for me to watch hockey if I don't make it to the playoffs. But it seems that these playoffs have been... you know, unbelievable. You know, I was watching my old teammate and my best friend Brad Richards with the Stars. You know, they're playing Detroit, and I was watching them. And obviously, watching the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, the two best teams in the league are playing against each other, and that's pretty rare because usually every year there's kind of an underdog. But this year, it's really two great teams going at it. So it's really fun to watch.
You have any prediction?
You know what? If it was yesterday, I would have said Detroit in five, but you never know. I mean, Sidney Crosby again last night played unbelievable, and but I think the next game is going to determine the series. So if Detroit wins tomorrow, then I think they're going to win. They're going to win the Cup.
You mentioned a couple of seconds ago new ownership. Len Barry and Orrin Kulis were actually in today to be interviewed by the executive committee, so we're going through the interview process. Tell me what you're looking forward to next season. What's got you focused on what's going to be good for the Tampa Bay Lightning next year?
Well, I think just the fact that we would get new ownership and these two guys. I mean, they know the game. They're from what I hear, they're going to be really hands on, and you know, they're going to be involved. So I think they want to bring a new philosophy to the Lightning and bring some other stuff. So, you know, we're just excited to you know, get some, you know, new and these. You know, I've never seen owners that passionate about hockey. You know, so. That's definitely going to be it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, you actually have two owners who both played the game, so not only are they passionate, they're extremely knowledgeable.
Exactly, that's important. There's some owners that not owners, but like there's some people that they're very passionate. They've never played the game, so we're lucky that you know, they have both.
Talk to people about what it's like to play hockey professionally in Tampa Bay. What's the lifestyle like? How do you like it? How do you see hockey as a development over the last few years?
Well, you know, when I first got in the league at 18, you know, we were a losing team, and it was pretty tough. I mean, there's 10,000-12,000 people, and then we started winning, and but obviously after you win the Cup, we just took it to another level. I think the fans are really—they've always been behind us, but right now I think they're—you know—every year, even though last year we had a tough year, they're really supporting us. I mean, you know, it's pretty much packed every game. You know, 18,000-19,000. So they're really behind us, and the lifestyle. I mean, it's really fun too. I mean, you get to play hockey, and then on a Sunday when we have a day off, we get to go fishing, go to the beach, and or play golf. So it's pretty special. So you know, playing in Tampa, everybody that's played here really enjoyed it.
Is it hard in warm weather to get your intensity up, or is it just because it's so much easier to relax that it makes going to work all the more fun?
It took me about the first 2 months in 98 when I got here. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I'm not used to this. I don't want to play in warm weather. And then you get used to it, and there's so many things. Like, you know, sometimes during the season, it's a long season. It's tough physically and mentally, and you just want to get away from the game. You can do it here. You know, you can go on the beach and just swim with your teammates, or you can play golf and, you know, just do something different to change your mindset. So I think it's great for a team to be able to do that, and I think it's been helping us.
Speaking about doing things differently, what are your thoughts about opening the regular season in Prague against the Rangers?
I think it's great. I mean, it's definitely something very different, but it's a new experience. And you know, I went to Prague under 17, and I really enjoyed it. So you know, I hear that you know, they're already sold out. Or you know, a couple of the Czech guys told me that everybody's so excited to you know, to watch us play over there. So it's gonna be fun. I'm excited.
Well, we're going to let you go, Vinny. Thank you for being with us yesterday. Congratulations on your incredible donation and all you do in the community. We wish you a speedy recovery, and I'll see you in Prague.
Perfect. Thank you. Take care. Have a good summer.
Thanks.
Thanks, Vinny. Good to see you yesterday. By the way, the Vinny LeCavalier Pediatric Cancer and Blood Disorder Center, that's part of the All Children's Hospital in St. Petersburg, Florida, scheduled to open in 2009. Vinny, state-of-the-art guy and state-of-the-art facility. It's going to have a HEPA-filtered positive airflow system that's going to allow the young patients whose immune systems may be suppressed due to chemotherapy the chance to move freely about the unit, not be restricted to their rooms. Bravo, Vinny LeCavalier.
Absolutely.
Yep, fantastic. We're going to step out. Stay on hold. We're coming back to answer your questions here on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice, XM 204 and NHL.com.
Coming up behind, make my way through this darkness. I can't feel nothing but this chain that binds me. Lost track of how far I've gone, how far I've gone, how high I've climbed. On my back's a 60-pound stone, on my shoulder half mile of line. Come on up for the rising. Come on up with your hands in mine. Come on up for the rising. Come on up for the rising tonight. Left the house is mine.
Find myself wanting to get up out of my chair.
You know, that's probably for Frank Brown, your occasional substitute co-host. Is a huge Springsteen fan.
It's an awesome song. Phone number here on NHL Hour is 877-645-6696. Commissioner Gary Bettman, I'm Bill Clement, getting ready to take more of your calls.
But,
you want to explain that emergency.
But before we do, we want to talk about the chirping. And the chirping has been in Arizona, in Florida, in Maryland, too, because we're getting emails. And the answer to the question is the FCC requires the activation at least once a week of the emergency broadcast system, also known as chirping, and it isn't it isn't the same time every week. It's random on day, it's random on time of day, but interestingly enough, it was done today. So those of you who have heard the chirping, I assure you, you are not crazy. Or if you are crazy, it isn't because you heard the chirping. Let's take the next quote.
That's pretty well sorted it out.
There you go. Jeremy in Nashville, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204.
Oh, good afternoon, guys.
How are you?
Okay. Yeah, well, my one quick question, I'll get to why I called. I just wanted to ask, you go to a lot of arenas, Gary, and when you watch a game, do you ever see something and say, oh, that's going to be a penalty, and then the refs don't call it? Do you ever get surprised by that?
The truth? Sure. You know, there are times, even on TV, watching a game where I'll say, you know, why did they not call that? Or sometimes I'll say, why did they call that? And then for the next 2 minutes, I'll go, oh, please kill the penalty. Please kill the penalty. Please kill the – it happens. Not as often as people think. Because I tend, obviously, not to be biased or passionate in terms of rooting for a particular team. I just want to see exciting, entertaining games, and I want the officials to do a good, fair job. Right. They do occasionally – make mistakes. Coley Campbell's fond of saying sometimes he sees the arm go up and he just wants to reach through the TV screen and rip it off. But it happens. Yeah. Not very often, though, because our guys are terrific. And when we get to this stage of the season, you're seeing the best of our officials, and our officials are the best in the world. Are they perfect? No, but they try to be. Because as passionate as the players are about the game, so are our officials. They care about it just as much.
By the way, I'm guessing suspension for ripping arms off?
Well, no.
I
said he feels like it.
I know.
And, Bill, you know you can't, even in high definition, reach into the TV screen and pull off an arm. Alex in Los Angeles, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204.
Hello, Bill and Gary. How are you today?
We're okay.
Yeah, you bet.
I just want to say that I am crazy about my Kings, and I am hearing the chirping, and I'm in Los Angeles.
Well, you can be crazy about your Kings, and we like that. The chirping doesn't mean you're crazy, but the chirping should have stopped by now.
Yeah, this is at least the second time that I hear it, but the reason I called is actually to make a comment, since I have your ear, Gary.
Sure.
Is I feel like a scorned Kings fan. By the 93 expansion year, I really feel like it really diluted the talent, and I can't help but feel that had there not been such a vacuum of talent from one Southern California team to another due to expansion, the Kings might have been able to come back to the finals since 93. And just another comment real quick. I just wanted to make sure that you knew that even though I am in this market and I am paying for Center Ice and my cable satellite provider, I am getting blocked out games every once in a while. Every season I get two or three games that are blocked out, and I can't help but feel that I'm a little bit cheated by that. Especially since I paid for the full package and I'm still not getting the games.
Well, I guess the answer on that is if it's only two or three games in the course of 184 or so day season, I think we're doing okay. Having said that, if you think you're getting blacked out of a game that you should be getting, and we do black out the local games on Center Ice because local games you should be getting either locally through your cable provider or satellite provider or an over-the-air in your market if that's how it's being televised. But if you, for any reason, and this applies to any listener, if you don't think you're getting a game that you're supposed to get, you should let us know, because occasionally they throw the wrong switch and they black out games that shouldn't be blacked out, but that happens very rarely. If it happens a couple of times a season, it's a lot, but it does happen, and we try and fix it. With respect to dilution and expansion, I don't know too many people, when you look at the influx of talent to our game in the 90s, particularly highly skilled players from Europe, particularly from the further development of American players and the continued great development of players in Canada, I don't think there's anybody who thinks our talent level is diluted. Teams have varying degrees of performance. That some teams have been more successful in their strategies and putting together winning combinations on the ice than others. But if there's one thing that I think the hockey world agrees on, is we've got plenty of talent.
Don't confuse a franchise's inability to win a Stanley Cup with dilution of talent. Since 93, I'm just doing some I think there have been 14 Stanley Cups awarded to nine different teams. I did it quickly in my head. I don't think those teams are saying that there's any dilution of talent. So the Kings have some work to do, but it ain't because of the dilution of talent.
Well, and I actually think the Kings have done a lot of work. Dean Lombardi has plotted out a good path for the team. They've got some great young kids, and this is the team that I think is being built for the long run, and I think Kings fans have reason for great optimism going forward.
Agreed.
I'm glad to hear that. Gordon in Arizona, you're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
We're good. How are you?
Not too bad. Gary, I got a couple questions for you. First, I'm a huge Canuck fan, so I want to give out my condolences to all Canuck fans. That's pretty tragic about Luc Brodeau. I am from the Ontario area, Gary, and one, I missed the Winter Classic last year because I'm a long haul truck driver. So, one, I was wondering, I heard reports that it's going to be in Chicago this year. I was just wondering if that was true. And two, I've never been to the NHL entry draft. I've been to thousands of games. But this year I'm going to go to Ottawa, and I was just wondering if any of the Canucks front office would be available for autographs or anything like that. Do you know if they are each year?
Well, the front office staff for all the teams will be in Ottawa for the draft. They'll be at the draft itself, obviously, and they'll be about town. They'll be at their headquarters hotel. And if you're lucky on a catch-as-catch-can basis, you may bump into one of them. And I find that not only are our players exceedingly friendly, so are our coaches and front office staff. And I'm sure if you identify yourself to one as a Canucks fan, somebody who's traveled a great distance, they'll be more than happy to say hello, give you an autograph. And if you bump into me and say, I'm the guy that called you during the final on your radio show, I'll stop and chat with you as well. So I'll look forward to seeing you in Ottawa. With respect to reports on the Winter Classic, every week we get one of these calls. Oh, you're going to announce it in Yankee Stadium. Oh, you're going to announce it here. We have no announcements to make. None are imminent. And any reports to the contrary are completely without merit.
No.
I'm so sorry. I mean, we're working on a variety of things, but nothing's been done, and we're not ready for anywhere close to it.
Has Yankee Stadium, though, some of the reports have said that Yankee Stadium has been ruled out.
Nothing has been ruled out, and nothing has been ruled in.
How many different cities are in the running?
A bunch.
How do we qualify? How do we quantify a bunch?
More than one and less than 10. Less than five. We're looking at less than five.
Okay, cool. How much time we got left? We got time for one more call?
We have time for one more
call. 1 minute. It's going to be a quick one, though.
Norm on Long Island, this is your lucky day on XM204. You're with Bill and Gary, but you got to be quick.
I'll be quick. Good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner. Playoffs have been phenomenal.
Thank you.
Love it.
Great.
Bill, you were a great player, great analyst.
Thank you.
Two questions. One is I have a concern when I go to my arena on Long Island or any arena in general that the music they play in between periods or play stoppages is so loud that my ears start to hurt.
That's the techno music. The quick answer to that, because we're running out of time, is if you go to games on a regular basis, you should tell the club. You should tell the clubs. They'd like the feedback. I find, compared to what I hear and see and hear about, we're mild compared to some of the other sports. But if you think that the audio in for the games you attend isn't quite to your taste, you should give the club feedback.
Okay. And my second point is, what can be done for the defensemen to give them the largesse to clear the front of the net so the goalies aren't getting run? I'll hang up now. Please continue the good work. And have a good day, gentlemen.
We defensemen have the ability to get physical in the crease to a point. And I think they all know what that point is. Gil passed that point a couple of times last night. But at the end of the day, you can push a guy out. You can have physical battles. And you can help your goaltender see the puck.
The trenches are still the trenches.
And we wouldn't have it any other way. And that's why the points that, we've made the game less physical. Au contraire.
Reminder, Game 4, Saturday night, 8 Eastern, NBC in the U.S., CBC and RDS in Canada. And remember, the entire playoffs are all about NHL radio. So we'll be there for you as well. Saturday night, Game 4, 8 Eastern. That's it. For the NHL Hour, we'll see you next week at 4 Eastern. Right now, it's time for Phil Esposito, who's on his deck somewhere in Florida, and Jim Taddy, who's in the igloo. Guys, take it in the slot.